In part one of this series, we learned about the long history of how so-called crimes against nature laws banning anal and oral sex came to be in Idaho and the rest of the United States. The ACLU of Idaho is currently suing the state to overturn Idaho's statute that, in some ways, is still being enforced. In the final installment of our two-part series, James Dawson reports how society eventually softened its view on these laws, though their effects still ripple throughout parts of the country. And a warning for listeners, this story covers sexual topics.
Persecution of the LGBTQ community was raging in the mid-20th century as the federal government was purging its workforce and anti-gay movements swept across the country.
One never knows when the homosexual is about. He may appear normal, and it may be too late when you discover he is mentally ill.
The Boys of Boise scandal in the 50s resulted in charges brought against 16 men, some of them for having consensual sex with adults, though others sexually abused teenage boys. All but one were sent to prison. But around that time, some in the legal community began a push to decriminalize consensual anal sex between adults at the state level as part of a movement to standardize criminal laws across the country. The U.S. has a patchwork of laws that differs state to state. University of Idaho law professor Sam Newton says this is partially due to state lawmakers trying to react to high-profile cases flagged for them by constituents.
The model penal code is a response to that kind of overreaction to say maybe we should standardize the criminal law and, you know, really fix a lot of problems that are happening.
Idaho was one of the first states to join the model penal code movement in the early 70s. But after lawmakers found out they had repealed so-called morality laws, with pressure from religious groups, they immediately reinstated them, while other states decriminalized them. All of this ultimately led to the 1986 U.S. Supreme Court case Bowers v. Hardwick out of Georgia. In a 5-4 decision, the court said gay people had no fundamental constitutional right to engage in sodomy. The reasoning by the majority was because it didn't want to wade into, quote, judge-made law that's not specifically spelled out in the Constitution. It would take nearly two more decades for another case like this to reach the U.S. Supreme Court.
This was one of the important cases of our lifetime to challenge the state's power to criminalize the lives of lesbians and gay men.
Suzanne Goldberg was sitting in her office at the LGBTQ law organization Lambda Legal when she got a call from a colleague in Houston telling her the news. Two men had been charged for having consensual sex under Texas law. Would she be willing to help?
Of course, we said yes.
Goldberg, who now teaches at Columbia Law School, says she saw an opening. She says attitudes had changed since the Bowers decision in the 80s. It led to more gay rights protests and people coming out of the closet to friends and family.
All of that helped America and members of the court see gay people as neighbors, as human beings with full dignity.
Eventually, the Supreme Court took up her case, Lawrence versus Texas. In a 6-3 decision in 2003, Justice Anthony Kennedy would rebuke the court's previous decision that allowed such bans on sex between consenting adults.
Their penalties and purposes, though, have more far-reaching consequences, touching upon the most private human conduct, sexual behavior, and in the most private of places, the home.
In his dissent, Justice Antonin Scalia remarked on the direction the court was taking, toward what he viewed as a path of illegitimacy in the eyes of the public that the majority in the Bowers decision feared.
It is clear from this that the court has taken sides in the culture war, and in particular in that battle of the culture war that concerns whether there should be any moral opprobrium attached to homosexual conduct.
That archival audio thanks to the Oye Project. LGBTQ rights groups hailed the new Lawrence decision as a significant step towards the legal acceptance of gay people across the country, something they would build on for years to come. But now, almost 20 years removed from the case, there are still 14 states that have consensual sodomy laws on the books, including Idaho. Some have argued it's a useful tool in sexual assault or rape cases, which can be difficult to prove at trial, or they can be used in a way to prosecute crimes against minors. Goldberg says she understands those arguments.
But we live in a system of laws, and we live in a system of equal justice. And we cannot have a set of laws that says, well, we're going to prosecute some people for consensual sex, but not others.
In some ways, Idaho is still enforcing it. As of December, 41 people are on the state's sex offender registry for committing these crimes either here or out of state. It's a lifetime requirement that limits where they can live and what jobs they can hold, though it's possible for some to petition a judge to expunge their record after 10 years. The ACLU of Idaho has sued the state and federal court on behalf of an anonymous man, as well as Randall Mengus. He was convicted in 1994 for having oral sex with two 16-year-olds shortly after he turned 18, something that would not meet the definition of statutory rape today. One of the boys in Mengus said the sex was consensual, according to police reports at the time. In a motion to dismiss the lawsuit, the state attorney general's office said the Supreme Court's opinion does not bar these kinds of laws when it involves minors or if there's a lack of consent. The case remains ongoing. James Dawson, Boise State Public Radio News.
You can listen back to part one of this series at our website, boisestatepublicradio.org.